Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic episode of the Clipset Podcast. We are joined by a very, very special guest today. We are very excited to have this guy on. You know him as the new Clippers beat writer for The Athletic. We know him as Law Murray. Law, we are very excited to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well.
Hey, Law, have you ever actually touched a basketball in your life?
I actually have. Okay. And you know what? It's been a year. So I really miss playing this pandemic. I've been very disciplined. So while I'm proud of myself, I really want to get back on the court soon. So we're going to get these shots this month and then we're going to get shots up. You feel me?
I feel you. And I have a question. Do you feel like you no longer know how basketball works because you're no longer a real hooper? Because a real hooper would have been playing this whole year. You know what I mean?
I guess a real hooper would have been, and I struggle with that. The only thing I've done on a court outside indoor court, you know, that isn't, you know, my little door thing here. Mm-hmm. On my birthday, I went out because I do this every year and I tried to dunk. And I'm in really good shape considering the pandemic. You know, I spent 6 months straight running every single day, no days off, stretched every single day since the first day of last summer, even mixing some, you know, calisthenics and some exercises. I've been consistent. But when you don't jump, you know, those muscles do need to get retrained. And I couldn't, I felt like I was on another planet trying to jump and dunk, man. Like, that's the only time. It was whack. Really thinking about DMX today, because when I posted the video, I used slipping from DMX, you know, and really just hoping that he pulls through. But I'm looking forward to getting back on the court. I actually think it's going to be like riding a bicycle. My game is not really based off of explosiveness. People think it is when they see me, but I have a great wingspan and I've been playing the game, and now I've been watching basketball so intensely, you pick up on things. So you want to see how that applies.
Do you think that you could suit up tomorrow? Because I think we need someone with a long wingspan who can maybe defend multiple positions.
Yeah, I could suit up tomorrow, but I'm not responsible for anything that happens after that.
Have you? So you've been able to dunk before? How tall are you? I met you the other day.
I'm 6 feet tall. On my best days, on my cops are chasing me days, I can get up and I can not finish authoritatively. You know, my dunks were about as impressive as Jason Kidd's were, you know.
Okay.
So a touch on that rim.
Yeah.
Technically it'll count. But my thing is, yeah, it's like on the fast break, I just take them Giannis steps, one long strides, get up there, stretch it over and finish.
That's good.
But I'm probably months away from that right now.
I dunked one time when I was 14 and I've never lived it down. Everybody always asks like, oh, have you dunked? Yes, I've dunked before. And I say it like I can continue to dunk today. I can't. I can't even touch the rim today. But one time when I was 14, I dunked a basketball and it was the highlight of my whole life.
How you peak at 14, man?
I have arthritis in both of my knees. I had, thanks, bro. Sore subject. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sore subject, bro. Really haven't gotten over it. I peaked at 14. Thanks, dude. In my personal life, in my athletic life.
That's like,
it's
that's
really
like
been
eighth,
downhill since.
That's like eighth grade for me, man. Shoot. I wasn't even dunking at 14. I was going to give you props. Like,
yeah,
man, I didn't get up there until high school. Eighth grade, I don't even know if I was dunking tennis balls.
As my athleticism waned, my game moved farther and farther and farther from the rim. So now I am very much in the three-point line camp. I run between those two, and that's all you get from me.
To be fair, Joseph has not told us how big the rim was that he dunked on at age 14. So.
It was 10 feet. I dunked on 10 feet. I dunked on 10 feet. I did. One time.
My man said he need a snorkel to get in the paint these days.
That's
it's
good.
True. It's true.
Well, Law, I know that I cut you off there in the beginning, but thank you for coming on the Clipset Podcast.
I appreciate
you here.
Y'all having me. It's been... like I said, ever since I joined the Athletic, you know, it's been cool to have a new kind of community digitally to engage with. So really appreciate it.
Course, yeah, how's that been? So you were at ESPN before. I know that you started way back in the day at Clippers blog, right? Like, didn't you come up with Jovan and Arnovitz and those guys?
I can't say that I came up with them. You know what I mean? Like, Kevin, I don't know what season it was when he first started it, probably right around the 2006 playoff run that the Clippers were on. But obviously, KA's the OG. He's an incredible person, an incredible journalist, a scholar in his own right. So Kevin put a lot of people on, you know. And when it comes to guys like Jovan and Andrew Hahn, Seth Partnow, C-Rat, I can rat off a whole bunch of names. Fred Katz, you know. I got it. You know, that era was really strong. Like, they had a lot of people checking in on a nightly basis, and the Clipper blog lives, like everybody was really on that in the early part of the past decade, the 2010s. I got on when I came back from the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi in 2014, which was an exhilarating experience personally for me as a budding journalist, like to be out in the middle of Russia for 3 weeks in a bubble before we were describing what bubbles were in terms of sports and everything. That was wild. And so I came back, I was finishing grad school at USC. You all know what happened late that April. That's when Sterling, the TMZ tapes broke. And that was kind of the first thing I got to write, you know, outside of your basic game coverage. So I'll never forget that summer, that first, well, not that, that first season, that first postseason and everything. But as I started to do more and be more consistent and be like the everyday contributor to Clipper Blog, like everybody else started taking advantage of what the work that they had put in and moving on. So right when I was starting to kind of be the person that people would recognize as a department, Jovan had gone on to Fox Sports. Like Fred, he was with me for most of that first full season, 14-15. I remember when DeAndre Jordan was going back and forth and we were trying to identify how the heck you upload emojis to Twitter. and like Fred was in Vegas. We were like, yo, this is crazy. This is crazy. I mean, but then Fred wound up going to OKC, right? Mm-hmm. Like eventually I was the only one, you know, and then ESPN hit me, and Clipper Blog never had any contributors after I left for ESPN full time, because I was working at the NFL and the research department I was trying to cover the Clippers on a daily basis. That was my life, man. Not even that long ago.
I mean, that's a hell of a first season to be covering the Clippers for sure. That feels like an accelerated welcome to the Clippers sphere.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I'm not an LA native. That's the other part of it. I'm from the East Coast. So the Clippers were just another team to me when I got out here. I obviously have a resentment towards one of the teams that plays in Los Angeles, and it wasn't the Clippers. But even that wasn't like a long lifelong thing. That's more like a developmental thing when you're learning hoop, the game, the culture, the media, all that. So I didn't have strong feelings about the Clippers really at all until much later.
Did you grow up a Sixer? You're from Philly, right?
I'm from Philly. I'm not really one to really tie myself to any team. Even when I was coming up, I kind of hopped. You know, I was always about players. I was always about what game is kind of piquing my interest. But I felt like it was important to know about everybody. I didn't It's cool when your hometown team is successful. Mind you, when I first got in the hoop, NBA Jam was out, and the Sixers were so bad. They had the only options were Sean Bradley, who get well, Sean Bradley, and Clarence Weatherspoon. Like that's it. That's it. The Sixers were so bad they couldn't even find a third player. Expanded rosters. Nah, y'all ain't get one. Allen Iverson was my favorite player growing up. And not just because he was the OG, he's dope, but I mean, the kind of player I was learning how to be, it was like, oh, I can be like AI. Like, we're the same height. First move I ever learned was a crossover. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the way that he ran offensively, like a lot of people focus on guys when they get the ball. But when I was growing up, I learned how to play off the ball. Like that was my special ability. It's like what happens before you get the ball. And if you remember those Sixers teams in the late 90s, and then when they peaked in the early 2001 season, what was AI doing? He was running a lot of those baseline, you know, those curls, those flares and whatnot, learning how to do stuff off ball, off screen. And that's how I kind of learned how to get into the game. So I love that particular team and that particular player. But I mean, shoot, depending on the season and the week, I can be cool with everybody, and I got heat for everybody.
It's funny because growing up with the Clippers as my home team, I was forced to watch the rest of the league, because if not, I would have killed myself as a young child just watching the Clippers play basketball. And you're talking about NBA Jam. Dude, I used to get on NBA Jam and destroy people with Ron Harper on the Clippers. I would always go to Ron Harper on the Clippers. But yeah, man, that's cool. We're super excited to have you back into the Clippers sphere and taking over the role over there at the Athletic. Should we get into this year's Clippers and what's been happening this past week? Joseph, I mean, you want to get us started?
We're here, so
let's do it.
Got to talk about.
All right, so I sent you a breakdown of this, but basically what we're going to start with is we're going to talk about our positive takeaway and our negative takeaway from this past week. So we're going to start with our positive takeaways from this last week of Clipper basketball. Law, we're going to start with you. So what's your most positive takeaway from this last week?
My most positive takeaway from this week was how Monday night went. I thought, you know, being down 12 against a Bucks team that not only didn't blow them out early this year, but the loss was not a good loss considering how the game went at the end. Considering that, and considering what happened last year against the Bucks, especially with Kawhi and PG available, it was like, oh, they're down 12 already. They're going to get smacked, you know. They don't seem like they have the consistency, whatever. And then not only did they come back and control the game, but when the Bucks did make it close, when it was a bonus situation, when you know Giannis is coming, you know, Luke Kennard goes off in four straight possessions, ends the game by himself, basically. That should be a signature win for the entire season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't need a whole lot more context beyond that. That should be a signature win for the entire season. That is how impressive that game was. I mean, I felt like the next night against Orlando, it was like, man, this is really going to test the gas, especially when you got guys missing. Thursday, we'll probably talk about that very soon. But Monday was a win that, if you're writing your little resume for quote unquote May Madness, NBA playoffs, right? That's what you're going to, you got to have something significant from that game.
Right. I agree with you. It was it was a big win.
I'm with Law on this one. My most positive takeaway was that Bucks game. You know, I was earlier in the season talking about how I felt like the Clippers didn't have like a true like marquee win yet on the season. They had some good wins. And you know, there were some impressive things that happened. This to me was, and there've been a couple since I asked for that, but this is like the marquee win to me. This was the first time the Clippers beat the Bucks in almost 3 years to the day. The last time they beat the Bucks was March 21st, 2018. That was the last time the Clippers beat the Milwaukee Bucks. So like you know, we can say whatever we want about how the Bucks went out in the playoffs last year. Same with the Clippers. They came in with title expectations. They came into this season with title expectations. And they've had the Clippers number for a while now. And for them to you know, come back in that game and win in the fashion that they did, like this was, you know, I'm with Law 100%. This was like the marquee win of the season for me. Like, even though the narrative wise, I think the Sixers game was a little more fun just for the narrative of the Clippers and Doc and all of that stuff. But in terms of just like championship expectations, what you want to see a contender do, that was the win for me. Really like that was, I think it was huge. And in a lot of ways, I think it negates the next two games after that. Joseph, where are you at?
I agree with you on that. I think what was more impressive was doing it back-to-back shorthanded against, not back-to-back in terms of days, but back-to-back games shorthanded against Philly and against the Bucks was really impressive. I think it was what we've all been asking for. And then to unfortunately have, you know, everything end because of 5-7 the next night was really like a brutal way to end that. But my positive takeaway from this last week is a positive takeaway kind of for the season. And it's Terrence fucking Mann. I mean, the dude is a real important rotation player. And we started this season, you and I, Brian, you a little bit more than me, but you and I basically being like, we don't see it. You know, we don't see who this guy is going to be. Like, and we were worried that it was going to be more like Fee than anything else. And for him to, you know, kind of start off and like find his place, and now to basically being like in the conversation for, are we sure we don't want him playing 20 minutes in the playoffs a game? Like, are we sure he's not a very important part of this rotation? And I think he is. I think the Clippers are going to need him. You know, in private conversations at the beginning of the season, I will admit, I said that he might be able to win you one game, but he's going to lose you two because of, you know, defense is sagging off of him. Good perimeter players have tended to pick on him on defense. I know he's an okay defender. I just don't think he's as good as people, I think, make him out to be. But Terrence is filling the Trez role that we need, and we've kind of circled around that. But I think that this is something that the team needs moving forward. And I think it's really great that the player development this year has found a way to unlock, you know, what makes him special. And what makes him special is that energy, that tenacity, and that ability to kind of fill in the gaps in ways that this team has needed with Pat out. So I think he's really important, and I think it's a really great thing to see.
Yeah, he's been great. I put it out like as a joke on Twitter. It was like, I don't care how much you believed in Terrence Mann, nobody saw this happening from him. And then, of course, I had 1,000 people going, I watched FSU all year, and like I knew it was happening. All right, nobody thought that he was going to be this important on a contender team. I don't know. Right. It's his energy. You know, I think Joseph, you called it like the shot in the arm. It's been amazing. And like, he really is kind of like filling in the role, not only that Lou left, but that Pat is leaving right now, being out, kind of being that like guy who can pick up the team and get them fired up. He's been fantastic. And like his 3-point shooting has come a long way. Cause for me, that was a big thing, was like, okay, he can get inside, but I want to see this guy take some of those corner threes, and he's knocking them down right now. So yeah, he's been huge. Law. I mean, do you trust, I guess my question about Terrence Mann, do you trust him being this role player in the playoffs?
Oh, you can't trust that. Cause he hasn't played significant playoff basketball yet.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So until he shows it, like, no, you can't trust it. That being said, does he deserve an opportunity? 100%. To your point about Terrence, like, let me say that if he played like this at Florida State, he wouldn't have been in the back end of the second round after being a 4-year senior. Like, I think the combination of him, obviously, guys spend more time in college than that, unfortunately, hurts a lot of guys, which it will always be asinine, but you know what? It gives certain evaluators, if you want to evaluate talent and you don't hold that against a guy and still feel like just because a guy spends 4 years in college doesn't mean he's capped as far as his potential, then you can really find some gems. Terrence has gotten better since he left Florida State. He, not just in the shooting, but in how he's able to be versatile, because they threw so much at him last year, and maybe that, you know, short-circuited him a bit last year. You see the benefits of it this year. He's able to legitimately play 5 positions for this team, coming off the bench as a second year guy on the oldest team, or damn near the oldest team in the league. That is a special, unique ability. And you got to give Terrence a bunch of credit for that. You got to give the coaches a lot of credit for it. And you got to give the vets. You saw people love bringing up leadership as far as one of their many tired idioms to describe this Clippers team. If that's not leadership, what the heck are people looking at? You know, Terrence Mann is an example of strong on and off court leadership and how that can affect a player. And now it makes Terrence feel like he is a core part of this team, that he does have a voice, that he does have a specific role, a specific accountability and responsibility to go out there and be consistent. So, you know, that's a Clippers organization credit to Terrence. But Terrence absolutely has worked himself into the player that he is right now. He needs to keep it going because, yeah, you're right. If we're saying in 3 months, damn, it's a damn shame Terrence ain't come through in the playoffs, that'll be unfortunate.
Okay. So
I want to say one more really quick thing about Terrence. I think that the experience that this staff had with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander helped Terrence. Obviously, Clippers are hit and miss with young guys. They did a nice job being patient and figuring things out with Shai. Shai's more talented, and you see that. Shai obviously has the much higher ceiling and much more time to get there. But I think in a kind of limited poor man's whatever role, like, I think that experience helped them get ready for Terrence.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a good call.
The Clippers are the second oldest based on this weird website I just found, behind the Lakers. So the Lakers are a little older than the Clippers in the aggregate. So that's probably because LeBron is 47 years old. Okay, so now we're going to move on to our negative takeaways of the week. Law, we're going to start with you again. What's your biggest negative takeaway of the week?
Paul George's toe. If y'all need me to elaborate, then I can. But the fact that came up as a reason to miss a couple games and then come back and looking as raggedy as he did Thursday, it's just unfortunate because you just know that his potential for being really good is going to be capped this postseason. He's got to deal with it, and it's going to be tough.
I think I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to couch it that way. I'm not a doctor, but I do have a minor in medicine from Google after dealing with chronic illness for the last 2 years. So when I was talking to friends of mine in the medical, basically the edema injury is in response to trauma in the area. So PG did something to his foot at some point, and it has now caused this bone bruise. And the only thing that's going to heal it is time. And so if that initial chunk of time that he missed didn't actually heal the injury, if he keeps playing on it, it's going to stick around. So this is something, I think you touched on this, Law. It's something that he's going to deal with for the rest of the year. It's just going to get better if he keeps jumping off of that foot. And to hear him describe in postgame, "I have no pop out of my right foot," is really fucking concerning, because that's not just going to affect the dunks or whatever. I thought it was really encouraging when he dunked in the Nuggets game, and then it didn't really help later on. But it's like, if his athleticism is going to be diminished by whatever that percentage point is, that it's going to diminish as athleticism, his ceiling is going to be lower on defense in terms of his jump shot. It's clearly affected his shooting. If you look at his shooting numbers over his last, five, six games or whatever it is, he's shooting like 30% from deep. So he's going to have to adjust. So he has two decisions. It's either he rests until the playoffs and hopes that gives him the time off that he needs to feel 100%, or he plays on it until the playoffs and figures out how to accommodate for the fact that he's constantly in pain. And it's a big deal. And it's really, really troubling that that's where we are with Paul George right now.
Yeah. And the thing is, it affects more than Paul. He's so good that, and he's evolved his game this season that,
yeah,
him being at less than 100% does make a big difference in terms of, he has gotten more comfortable as a ball handler. He still has multiple sloppy expositions a game. He'll dribble off of his foot, he'll lose a handle or whatever. But he has gotten comfortable to make plays for others, to just hold on to the rock. He's been really good defensively with the second unit. That allows you to obviously be sustainable. It allows you to make the kind of comebacks that happened Thursday. A lot of people had their jokes off about Paul George and his miscues yesterday or Thursday, but Paul was out there when they cut that lead from 17-1 as well.
Right.
Him being out there at less than 100% does make a difference. And you just, again, hope that the Clippers are doing the right thing, trying to strike that balance between his availability and how much pressure that takes off of everyone else, especially Kawhi, and helping him get to the point where he could, avoid the way off P memes in a month and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had negative takeaways as injuries. Again, we're still dealing with it. You know, I'm to the point now where I'm, you know, as we get closer to the playoffs, I might start investing some money into like cortisone. And, you know, because I feel like we might see a spike there with this Clippers team, upping up the amount of shots that they're taking going into these games. You know, we've already covered the injuries here. I think another one, and this is like very specific, is pulling Zoo late in the game against Denver. Zoo was doing such a good job against Jokic, keeping him from getting comfortable with his scoring. He was really physical with them, and then pulling him off the floor at the end of the game was really confusing to me. I know that there were, you know, some foul trouble issues, but there were like, what, 2-3 minutes left in that game when he came off the floor, and it just didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I almost wonder if Ty was thinking like, oh, well, we went small against Utah and had really good success with that. Maybe we try that again. I'm not sure. And then the other one is just, you know, Daniel Aturu is a third big who like is barely seeing even garbage time minutes. And Patrick Patterson, who's, you know, 74 years old, is soaking up all the backup 5 minutes. And like, I feel like at this point in the schedule, just see if Aturu can give you something on some of these nights where it's like the team doesn't have it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Orlando would have been the perfect game to put him in the rotation and see what you can get out of him.
Yeah, I asked about Aturu. I tend to ask targeted questions to Ty just because there's not a whole lot he's going to divulge on.
Right.
And obviously with the news that Boogie Cousins might be coming to this team in the next week or so, it's like, all right, what's the plan with Daniel? Because they're handling Daniel differently than they did Fee, right? Mm-hmm. They gave Daniel a little bit more of an investment than you normally see from a second round rookie. Obviously they got Daniel at a time where they had Fee from the year before. They saw enough of Fee to decide that they were moving on that quickly. They are taking things extremely slow with him. And maybe that's, you know, because there wasn't a G League, maybe because they want to just bubble wrap him because they know that next year is what they want to see from him. But I get that. I'm with you, Brian. Like I think that this team would have benefited just seeing something, and they've made a conscious choice, a very conscious choice. They've been extremely shorthanded, and he's the one guy suiting up, not playing. That's a conscious choice. He's a red shirt. He might as well be Jay Scrubb, to be honest with you.
Who, by the way, I am convinced Jay Scrubb is going to come out and be like the greatest draft pick of all time for the Clippers. I can't tell you why I have this feeling, but with, you know,
we were just talking about Terrence Mann. Like, this team is better with certain guys than they are with others. And I, you know, that's your feeling, Brian. I'm here to validate you.
I appreciate that, Law. I need that every now and then because I host the show with Joseph, who just loves cutting me down, bully ball with me all day. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the support here.
So that's how y'all compliment each other. I see.
Yeah, don't build them up too much, Law. So my negative takeaway is knee-jerk nation. I'm just so tired of everybody living and dying with every goddamn game. I mean, the Clippers go on this win streak and it caps with two really big, really important wins where not only did they win, they won convincingly and they held off these runs by these good teams. They locked in, everything looked great. And then they get killed by a 5-7. And then they lose to a Denver team where they had a slight rest disadvantage too. But yeah, it's a bad loss. They should have won the game against Denver. They were able to pull them down into the mud later. They just came out too slow. I get it. Same time, saying that, like, I mean, oh my God. I saw reactions after the Magic game about how this was indicative of their clutch time issues. It's like, dude, they just played 5 games in 7 days. They were exhausted in the second half of the second quarter. Like, can we not break down this game as though it's like this grand demonstration of who the fuck the Clippers are? Because it's not. Are there issues? Of course there are. But just talking about the season like it's not what it is fucking asinine. And I'm so tired of getting like screamed at all the time about how, put your headphones back on, Brian. I'm so tired of getting screamed at about all of these fucking games. It's like, dude, this is a horrible season. Like, it's really bad. It's 72 games. It's a cash grab. It's condensed. Short off season. The Clippers can't get fucking healthy. Like, can we stop pretending like every single game is the real marker of whether or not this team is a contender? If they're healthy, they're a contender. That's how it fucking works. I'm sorry. That's my rant.
Dude, we got a rant. We got a rant. We missed the rant last week. We got a rant this week. I'm excited. Yeah, I hear you. The Orlando one was like odd to me because the whole time I was sitting there being like, as a schedule loss, it's not like there have been losses this season that have been really frustrating. And like, yeah, I think Denver was more frustrating than Orlando. But like the Orlando one, I was like, this is the most contextual. You're going to lose this game most likely. Even when they were up like 12 or whatever, I was like, they're not going to pull this one out. Like they look exhausted. And that one was the most surprising to me where I was like, this team gets no leeway from its fan base. Like I feel like there are people out there in the fan base that won an undefeated season from this team. And that's the only thing that will keep them happy.
I will say this about the Orlando game. They were up 13, I think, at halftime.
Yeah.
I expected the Magic, as ragtags that group was, I knew they'd make a run. And they did. They made the run. I really got to the point where it's like the Magic get credit for the run that they made, but it is really difficult to see 2:39 left and you know the Clippers were up 7 and to see things develop as they did. It reminded me of that Kings game against the Clippers several years back where the Clippers had like a 21-point lead. Of course, it was a matinee Sunday.
I was there.
And somehow Buddy Hield and company found a way to win that game. This was before Buddy got in the habit of running out of arenas when something scandalous happened. but it was just a shocking of, man, you're up 7 and you lose by 7 with, two and a half minutes ago. That was tough to deal with. And it's like, that's where it's like, yeah, you're too thin. It was no surprise that the very next day, it's like, all right, we're going to float that we're going to bring some reinforcements in.
Right.
That's the Clippers are really playing a really dangerous battle of, can you just survive this damn regular season, get enough wins to feel good about yourself and not making a huge deal out of things? Cause this is not the time to be judging the team.
That's also very confusing too, right? The Clippers have 13 dudes on the roster after the moves, and there have been these guys that basically are NBA level like bodies that are out there. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was out there all fucking season. Glenn Robinson III was released 3 months ago or whatever. It wasn't 3 months ago, but still a long available. Time ago. He's still available. Dwayne Dedmon's been out there. This team has needed a third center forever. Dwayne Dedmon's still out there. Jan Mahimny's still out there. You know, it's like these dudes who you could theoretically throw out in these emergency games and be like, okay, like whatever. Is it the best option? No, but is it better than playing Patrick Patterson at the five for 25 minutes a night? Maybe. I don't know. But to not have these guys in and to kind of just be sitting back and being like, oh, let's bring in Boogie Cousins. I don't really understand what this team is doing to fill out the back half of the roster for a season that we all knew was going to be super tough. Injuries aside, just like we all knew it was going to be super tough.
I think the DeMarcus signing, so it's a 10-day. I literally think it's just a placeholder. So there's a rule. I think it's like 14 or 21 days that you can have less than 14 guys on your roster. And so they had to make a move. They were like, I think right now they're like 4 or 5 days away from hitting that mark. And I think that they're just kind of observing to see, you know, it's funny because I saw somebody tweet at Clipperholics, like, why don't they just go get Kelly Olynyk? Well, Kelly Olynyk is not available, but I think they're waiting to see if he's going to get bought out. I think that's somebody they're keeping an eye on. There's the rumors that the Lakers might buy out Marc Gasol. I think they're keeping an eye on that. I think that they want to keep their options somewhat open for right now. And that DeMarcus Cousins is just a placeholder for the time being. Now, if he comes in his 10 days is like, hey, I look great. Cool. Maybe they found something there. If not, it's a 10-day experiment and you got your spot open to go get the guy that you were watching anyways. I don't know if they made that signing with like long-term plans in mind.
Brian, I agree with you. For the most part, I agree with you. The difference, and this goes to Joseph's point, is there's a bunch of dudes out there who right. could have fit the 10 days, let's just see how it goes, move on, criteria. Mm-hmm. And the difference, and I wrote about this when the news broke Wednesday, the difference with Boogie is that he knows too many people in that locker room to where you don't bring a guy like that in to kind of let him go unless it's a complete disaster. And mm-hmm. this Clippers team is not really privy to short-term disasters. You know what I mean? Like you saw with Joakim Noah last year, he was a 10-day and then they were like, we're bringing you to the bubble. We're going to sit a first round rookie and we're going to bring you to a bubble with a new rest of the season contract, because those 10 days deals going into the hiatus actually mm-hmm. expired and teams had to recommit to those guys. Noah was a case. Anthony Tolliver with Memphis was a case. So this is a thing where it's like, because of I cited three guys in my story on The Athletic, Patrick Patterson, who Joseph, I think you recognize, was kind of hinting at a move like this for a while. Rajon Rondo. Rondo's another example of a guy that's like, okay, if you're going to trade Lou Williams, you don't trade him for, you know, insert league average guard here. They went with Rondo, who is probably below average as a regular season contributor, but clearly they were looking for something beyond who the actual player on the floor was, right? It's the same kind of thing with Boogie. So you now are probably bringing those two guys in. And then Paul George, who won a gold medal with him, you know? It's about right. relationships. And that's really what the Clippers are going for, because what's the reaction from last year? You had a bunch of dudes, great talent on paper, who acted like they didn't know each other or didn't want to be around each other. At the very least, you're decreasing your talent, which is questionable all the time. But the only way you overcome a decrease in talent, because we saw Tuesday night, talent isn't everything, is to increase the will of people who want to be around. And that isn't, you know, it's questionable, but it's not nothing.
Yeah, that's fair. I think my biggest hesitation with DeMarcus is just like, we keep talking about how this team can't get healthy.
Everything
and
else.
They bring in DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's
ideally
rough.
DeMarcus doesn't play. Ideally, yeah. DeMarcus comes in, spots up for whatever you want him to do in very short bursts with he did with the Rockets. His issue with the Rockets, shout out to Kelly Eco, is when he started playing more. When they started being like, oh, yeah, we've had you all season, Boogie. You've played well in short spurts. Let's see you roll out some Zubats length spurts. No, that's not not an option. Shouldn't happen with this Clippers team you know, he winds up getting signed.
Let's move into our next segment, which is our favorite segment, hot take, not take. Okay, so we're going to start off with our hot takes. We're going to do a round robin. Hot take about either this last week or it could be something that's season long. Law, are you ready with a hot take?
Yeah, it's not hot to me, but it'll be hot to y'all. I don't expect the Clippers to get out the first round.
Wow.
Wow.
Why is that?
I wrote that. That is hot.
I wrote that in December, and I don't, you know, I don't need to change it. And I think it does come down to the matchup, but I actually thought that the Clippers would be a 3 seed in December for this season. I thought they'd see the Nuggets as a 6 seed. And when I kind of made my evaluations, I don't do evaluations just for one team, and I do it for everybody, all 30 teams, who makes playoffs from there, what's the matchups from there, and go on. And I felt like in a playoff series, the Nuggets would win a 7-game series. And in this case, it was the first round. So this is not a reaction to Thursday, but Thursday did not make me feel like I should change anything either.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's hot. I had a hot take a few weeks ago that they weren't going to win the championship this year. You just took my hot take and you threw more gasoline on the fire. So I appreciate you really leaning into the segment here.
Yeah, man. yeah, like I said, I don't mean to I don't mean to be too hot takey, but then again, like, that's just how I feel. And I know the reaction is more of a hot take than the actual, you know, statement itself.
Yeah. I think that if it is the Nuggets in the first round, there is definitely a possibility that the Clippers lose that series. I would take the Clippers in that series just personally, just based on my own belief. But Brian and I were having this conversation before the episode, and I'd put the Clippers at like 53-47 over the Nuggets. Like, do I think the Clippers win? Yes. But would I be shocked if the Clippers lost? No, because I think that's a really close sort of series, you know, pairing. Now, if they don't get the Nuggets in the first round, I feel much better about the Clippers' chances against other teams that aren't named the Lakers. And I think they can get out. You know, I took some umbrage on Twitter with someone saying the Clippers are going to lose in the first round because it was a reaction to a game. And I thought that that was an overreaction to a game. Now, if we're going to talk about a specific matchup they might get in the first round, then yeah, there's a possibility they could lose to someone like the Nuggets. But if it's not the Nuggets and it's not the Lakers in the first round, I think saying this team isn't good enough to get out of the first round, that's an overreaction to some of the struggles that they've been having.
And I'm glad that you said it like that, Joseph, because that is not what I'm saying. I do emphasize the matchup, and that's what the playoffs are all about. People always, right. Teams, you can't ask teams, hey, what seed would you like? No one gives a damn. And this season, because of what's happened with the Lakers, it blows a lot of that out of proportion. It reminds me of 2003 when you remember 2003 before that first round series was best of five. And they saw the Lakers were struggling. So in the middle of the season, they were like, all right, we're going to make this best of seven. Yeah. That's around the time when I started being like, you know, that was after Donahue and, you know, and in the 02 conference finals. That's when I was like, oh, I don't think I like the Lakers like that anymore. National media loves to talk about the Clippers. I talk about the Lakers, so I'll just put that out there. But it's the same thing. Seeding is going to be so severely disrupted that the conversation is going to be, we can talk about it right now, the three of us here. Watch everybody start talking about and getting in their feelings 2 months from now after how the thing lined up after the play-in tournament and how that first round goes. Guarantee you. We almost got there in 2015 when you had the Clippers as a 3 seed against the defending champ Spurs as a 6 seed. And
that everyone was insane. Looking at the
Clippers like, oh, y'all met. Exactly. And no one talks about how that series went, how the Clippers came back from down 3-2, had a forced game 7 and found a way to win that series at the end. That was one of the best playoff series in the first round ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
They changed.
But all anyone talked about going in was, oh, because of divisions, that's how it lined up.
Yeah, well, they changed that rule because Portland won their division, and that was why we got that first round matchup, right? Because they were given the third seed because of
the third seed was Houston
record.
That year, and Portland was the four, I think.
Everybody was tied, like 3-6. Like everybody was either tied or within a game of each other. And based
that's
on
right,
your
that's right, that's
division
right.
record or something like that, you took third or whatever. So that was insane. I got blackout because game 7 was the same night of Mayweather Pacquiao.
That was an insane sports day. Kentucky Derby too.
Insane sports
I don't even
day.
Watch horses, man.
I got blackout drunk and diagrammed the Chris Paul game winning play to everybody in the room. And I don't know why they listened to me. It was a really interesting night for me. Okay, Brian, what was your hot take from the week?
My hot take. So I feel like almost like my hot take and not take might be flipped, but we'll see. My hot take is that Serge is not actually that injured and that he's just on vacation mode right now. If you follow Serge online, he's just posting pictures of himself like chilling hard. Like he's relaxing right now. And then every time I see him walk to the bench, like halfway through the first or second quarter in the arena, he looks like he just walked off a beach. Like he's like in like board shorts and like a bucket hat. And like the dude is in vacation mode right now. I'm convinced that he just told the front office like, hey, I'm tired. I want to be ready for the playoffs. Just give me some time off. He's on the LeBron James sabbatical trademark it. He's on that right now.
I'm assuming you agree, Law, but based on that reaction, I'm assuming you agree with that.
That is an amazing take. That's all I can say. And it's believable. That's the craziest thing about it. Man's dropped a single, you know.
Yeah.
Got to talk to the post-game media for like only the second time all season. Mm-hmm. That Warriors game was like, hey, man, we need to come out with some different energy. Also, champion, y'all need to translate that, John, and understand what I'm talking about. Hurst is back the very next game. We ain't seen him since. Like, maybe. People forget. Serge missed a lot of last season. A lot of those Raptors missed a lot of last season, and they all mm-hmm. came back together, and you know they were ready to go. They destroyed the Nets. They took their spirit. They should have, you know, if they were a little bit better offensively, they would have beat the Celtics too. So, yeah, you can't doubt Serge. Serge is here for a reason. A lot of guys want Zoo to start over him. I don't think it matters that much. Like, I think Ty Lue knows what he's doing. I think Serge knows what he's doing. There's a lot of "we know what we're doing" energy with the Clips, and you just got to hope that they know what they're right. doing.
Yeah. I think all of us have PTSD from last year feeling like we were getting that same energy. We know what we're doing. We're holding our cards to our chest. We're doing all this other stuff. And then we got to the bubble.
The bad habits, right?
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, you kind of felt like, okay, they're pretending. They're playing possum. They're going to change things up when the playoffs come. You know, they've been doing all this secret stuff. And then we got to the playoffs and we're like, oh, no, your plan was just to do the same thing and hope that it worked. And so I think a lot of us are a little skeptical of like I believe in Ty, but I think as a fan base, we're all a little bit touchy on the whole like, yeah, there's some plans that are going to come together in the playoffs because we're like, yeah, we've been sold that line before. And it didn't really happen.
So. I do love that before the Denver game, Ty made a quote. He said something about like, yeah, you know, you want to play a little bit coy. You want to play your cards close to your chest. And then they went out and shit the bed. And I was like, Ty, that was perfect execution of playing coy and keeping your cards close to your chest. That was masterful way of not showing what you're capable of doing.
Yeah. I think Ty is getting tired of, you know, having to answer for when the team within the means of not doing complicated stuff doesn't do the things that respect the game, not coming out and playing with a defensive mindset, not being physical, basically getting punked, you know?
Yeah.
Ty has been very pointed with his criticism with the team, which is also why he's here, why he gets the respect that he does. So, again, like tomorrow, I know Joseph, you were asking, hey, you know, why'd you say what you say about who's going to play against the Lakers? And I mean, all I'm going to say is Rajon Rondo isn't talking to ESPN, you know, right. when we can't get him if they ain't playing them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So Ty saying that he's playing tomorrow isn't a big shock to me. It's like, oh, you're going to talk to Rachel, but you're not talking to us. So you definitely plan, because what you're not going to do is you're not going to embarrass Rachel. You know,
right.
There's one former Clipper who already has done that this weekend. But it ain't, you know, as far as like getting on national TV and whatnot, doing a little one-on-one, John, before a nationally televised holiday Sunday game.
Right.
They're not going to be looking at, yeah, I talked to Rajon. Here he is next to Jeremy Castleberry for the fifth game in a row.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just looking at that. And I was like, oh, he's got something's got to give.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that. I think I'm interested to see how he plays and kind of what Ty does with those rotations. My hot take is that what the team has been able to do this season is way more impressive than it is a disaster. The fact that the team is even in sniffing distance of trying to be the second seed after dealing with the same bullshit that they dealt with all last year, where they also did that, having one of the greatest offenses of all time in terms of efficiency, being able to make adjustments and have the steps that Kawhi and Paul George have taken as pick and roll ball handlers, which was a real issue. I think Kawhi was efficient at it in terms of like numbers, but it always felt like it wasn't really something the team trusted. And for them to be able to take the steps that they've made as playmakers and be able to control the offense is something that I think bodes well for the playoffs if they do make a deep run, because I think that you can be a little bit more confident in running the offense through them and having them not only be able to score for themselves, but also set other people up. I think that basically, I mean, the Clippers, after having dealt with all these injuries, I think what Pat, Kawhi, and PG have played all of 24 games together or something like that this season, and to still be where we are in the middle of this hellscape of a season, I think is really impressive. I think what the Clippers have done is really impressive. Are there things to improve on? Of course. But to sit here and shit on them and say that they're like a disaster, I think wildly misses the mark of what they've been able to do with what they've had this year.
It's a scorcher. That is a scorcher.
Yeah, if you ask Knee Jerk Nation, it is a scorcher for sure.
Should we get to not take?
Yeah, let's get to not take. Law, what is your not take?
You know, I was confused about this one when you guys presented it. You know, just rational observations and whatnot. But I guess my rational observation is that despite the just desire to play small all the time, that this team just continues to rebound really well. I've always found that interesting. There's been a conversation. You saw the Lakers got Andre Drummond, and the polarizing nature of that transaction of really all of Andre Drummond's career really has been a matter of being polarizing. My guy, Chris Herring, who I adore, wrote a great story about, you know, the declining importance of rebounds. Right. And then you get this team, this Clippers team, their power forwards are not great rebounders within themselves, right? The traditional power forwards, even Serge, when he was out there, not exactly killing it on the glass. Zoo is your best high level guy. You have great wings doing it. A great guard in Beverly when he's playing, but he's not playing a lot. This team is a top five rebounding team. Coming into the week, right, they were, I think, one of the best defensive rebounding team. They've struggled this week. That's why they need some reinforcements up front. But that is critical. And it's going to be very interesting to see if that matters at all, because Ty Lue alludes to this when he talked about playing coy. You guys noticed that we expect some different things defensively from this team in the postseason. Some things where it's like, oh, we got you in a series. Ain't nothing you can do about it now. But the one thing that you can't hide is, are you going to get the damn ball or not? And clearly the Clippers are going to add whatever they add in the playoffs to a defense that closes possessions after they force misses. I think that's going to be something to just keep an eye on.
Yeah, they've done a really good job of limiting second chance points for other teams. And even on offensive boards, most nights they're winning the offensive boards game. Like they are giving themselves a lot of second chances with that. So they've looked really good there for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely been something they've been good at all year, is limiting extra opportunities for the other team. If you look, their opponent offensive rebounding percentage is in the top five, I think, maybe now. I can't remember. And then them limiting turnovers. And I think valuing the basketball is something that they've definitely put an emphasis on. And they're building, you know, the quote unquote good habits that way. And it's really going to be something that's going to kind of lift them once they sort of add in, like you were talking about, Law, the other layers to what they're doing. Brian, what is your not take?
My not take is that there were more red flags in the Atlanta comeback win than there were in the Orlando loss. And in that, I'm saying, this is what I'm saying, that might be a hot take to some people, I don't know. But, you know, the Orlando loss, it was a scheduled loss. It was like, I think winning that would have been big. But I mean, we literally saw Terrence Mann putting his hands on his knees instead of chasing down rebounds in that game. Like they looked absolutely gassed. In Atlanta, It took Terrence Mann having a massive game. It took Luke Kennard not missing a single shot in all of his minutes. It took this like unconscious like effort from these two guys. And this kind of goes back to like what we were saying. Like, you know, is Terrence Mann a guy that you really trust going into the playoffs, right? Is Luke Kennard a guy who's going to make every single shot in a playoff game? Most likely not. And so like, to me, it was that getting them back into the game, which is great. It's super fun. It's a one night thing. Like, holy shit, they did it. You know, kind of like the Miami game earlier this season when the Canoes beat the Heat. It's like, cool, man. It's super fun. But like, there's red flags there that it takes those guys getting your team back into it. There were two superstars on the floor for the Clippers that completely shit the bed against Atlanta. And
for the first, it took 40 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. But it took these, it took this, like, you'll never get those games ever again from these two other guys to get them back into it. And to me, that's a bigger red flag than, you know, of a 5-7 scheduled loss against the Orlando Magic.
Absolutely. I am in violent agreement with you.
We were robbed of what was going to be Ty Lue's sharpest, angriest rant if they would have lost that game against the Hawks.
he was still pissed.
Would not have wanted to see it, but he would have. Oh, he was.
He was pissed. Yeah.
But he. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you bench all your starters, and it's like, the great thing is it worked.
Yeah.
For him, but he even said, "I don't really have answers." Like.
Yeah.
He was upset, and he didn't need to go that deep into it. He even politely, because again, Ty is a prince of a gentleman, he even politely declined to discuss what the heck he said to them.
Yeah,
before halftime, he had to bench those dudes.
I like to think that after that game, they all got in the locker room. They're like, "Yeah, we did it. This is awesome." And he grabs Terrence Mann and Luke Kennard, and he's like, "You two fucked up what I was trying to do tonight. You messed up the message. I don't appreciate you guys coming out and doing that.
How dare you win that game for them?" Yeah.
Joseph, what's your not take?
The Clippers are running out of time. I think hopefully Serge comes back soon. Hopefully Pat gets healthy soon. Hopefully this thing with PG gets figured out. Hopefully. They're running out of time to put the pieces together. There's 21 games. After today. And that's not a lot of time. The playoffs start in what, 7 weeks? You got to have enough time to get your guys together, get them on the same page on the court. I think that the camaraderie thing is good. I think this team is pulling in the same direction, but Ty needs time to figure out who the fuck can play together, especially in the playoffs. He's got to figure out who he's got. Really, and there's not a lot of time left, and that's my biggest worry. I think that this team is really good. I think that I'm of the opinion, this is another hot take for you, I'm of the opinion that the Clippers are either going to win the championship this year or they're going to lose in the first round, like you're saying, Law. I think that that's their trajectory. They're either going to put it all together and we're going to watch it and be like, holy shit, that's what we've been waiting for. And it's going to be sunshine and rainbows. And we can all stop talking about, you know, the angst of the Clipper fan, because we'll finally have one, right? Or we're going to flame out again and everybody's going to question leadership and toughness and blah, 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 blah. When in reality, it was just the injuries really ruined another potentially great Clipper season. And it seems to be the tagline of every Clipper season since 2010. And even before that, but since 2010, the Clippers have been considered in the realm of possibility, and every fucking time an injury has come and bit them in the ass. So they're running out of time to get healthy and get ready.
Yeah, I think the difference between the difference between this year and last year is the hiatus. The Clippers were coming into this Sunday matinee home game against the Lakers, national TV. But I think they won six in a row going into that game. They won six in a row, then lost two in a row going into this game. Now, this game won't mean nearly as much because of who's not playing. We get that. But they better win.
Right.
Mainly because of where they are in the schedule, right? You win and you can get back on track, focus on what is a very important rest of the homestand. This homestand is an opportunity, right? Yeah. Joseph, like anytime you talk about health and gaining consistency and figuring things out, you can work on things when you're going to your own bed, your own practice facility, not getting on a plane. This is an opportunity. They're in the middle, the sweet spot of this opportunity, literally the middle of a 9-game homestand. They win and it's like, all right, reset. We can focus on more important things. You lose and it's like you have that doubt, that creeping doubt. Last year, they lost to the Lakers. They beat the Warriors. They didn't see each other for months, and they never got that team back again. Like, let's just put it, they never got that team back again. this year, you're expected to just focus on what needs to be focused on. If they get it right, it means something going into the playoffs. And at the same time, if they don't get it together, you're just like, it's a missed opportunity.
Last year, the window for everybody, but especially them. Yeah,
exactly. You don't want to miss opportunities, especially when you got a very important guy in a contract year.
Yeah, exactly. I think to kind of touch on that for just 1 second, I said this on Twitter the other day and Matt Moore fucking retweeted me because he loves to sick the hounds on me. But I think when we look at these two Clipper seasons, there's been a lot of questions about Kawhi's legacy, about the Clippers championship fraud bullshit. And really what it comes down to is the Clippers were kind of finding their stride, figuring out who they had. We're going to start to, you know, really quote unquote lock in. And then the 3 month hiatus happened. They weren't able to build those habits. And then they're thrown into this situation that they didn't want to be in. It's been pretty much widely reported. The majority of the guys didn't want to be there. They weren't ready for that type of, you know, situation. And then two of our top eight guys, two of our most important guys were grieving the loss of a loved one as they were in the bubble, and their play sort of stopped the Clippers from beating Denver in five games and maybe riding that momentum forward. But it's like, so that happens. Okay, the bubble, really shitty situation. Year one of a two-year championship window basically gone because of this extenuating circumstance. And now it's like year two of that window is after a short offseason in the middle of the same fucking pandemic where they're basically in a bubble anytime they go on a road and the set, like the schedule's condensed. And it's like, dude, how is this our luck that we finally take that step forward into, okay, the Clippers are for real capital C contenders. And then it's like, oh yeah, you're going to deal with the two most unprecedented seasons in NBA history. Have fun, figure it out.
The only silver lining there is that on some level, everyone's got to deal with it, and there are no excuses. So last year you didn't, and this year, you know what? Only one team's going to win the championship.
Right.
Find a way to make it sure.
Find a way to win.
That's it. Yeah. That's the only mentality you can really have.
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, let's move on,
Joseph. Let's take us out
to our final segment. This is track of the week. So, Law, I think I sent you a little blurb about this. Just a track that's been getting you through the last 24 hours, the last week, the last month, the last however long. Something you're really vibing to right now. So, Law, what's your track of the week this week?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I was on the Wu-Tang samples lately.
Okay.
Which is, I love the Wu-Tang Clan in general, but like I've been listening to the samples a lot more. And there's this track, and I'm trying to pull it up, but it's by David Porter, and it's The Masquerade. I'm afraid the masquerade is over. It's just a really, really dope track, and it was sampled by RZA for, I forget what he sampled it for. It was one of Jizz's songs on Liquid Swords, Duel of the Iron Mike. The thing I love about hip hop is how it just takes so many elements of past genres, or not past genres, past eras, different genres, and you can spin it into something else. Like that part of the art, I think, is fascinating. So, I've been really on that for the last 48 hours or so.
That's what's up.
That's sick. Are you listening to Shaolin Soul? Is that what you pulled that off of?
Nah. I mean, shout out to all the users of Spotify, man. someone put a really great samples playlist together, and I'm like, shit, I can like do a lot of nothing just listening to that right now.
Yeah, RZA years ago put together a compilation of all the stuff that he had sampled and released it as Shaolin Soul. So it's like all of those on one compilation. That's how I got into Ann Peoples, actually, was through Shaolin Soul. Stone's Throw does that with all the samples they use on their record label. So Madlib will put together, and he'll like go through his crate digging stuff and re-release them on like 12-inch singles. So it sounds amazing. I love when producers do that stuff and show you kind of the source material that they're working with. I'll go. My track of the week is from a group from Houston called Krangbin, which I just learned is the Thai word for airplane. And they're a really good kind of like psychedelic soul three piece out of Houston. And the song is called Time. It's really repetitive. It's got kind of like a disco feel to it. But it's just really good vibes, as the kids would say. So I've been playing that as we had some warm weather this week. And that's been my, like, throw the windows down, you know, driving through LA when it's like 80 degrees jam. So yeah, I've been enjoying that one.
That's good.
Joseph, what do you got?
3 weeks of vibes, bro. 3 weeks of vibes.
Dude, I'm on the vibe train. It's vibe the endless train. Summer.
Mine is off of an album by Bruiser Wolf, which is another member of the Bruiser Brigade. If you do not listen to the members of the Bruiser Brigade, you're missing out. The song is called I'm an Instrument by Bruiser Wolf and Danny Brown, whom I love. The entire album is really my track of the week because I've been listening to it nonstop. I've sent it to all of my friends. It's just, it's so interesting and weird and awesome. And he sounds like Detroit Sugar Free. And he has like incredible wordplay. And they're just so much fun. The Bruiser Brigade is so much fun to listen to. They're really interesting. Anyway, this track is a track and a half. And I keep spinning it and spinning it and spinning it. But go listen to that album if you're into hip hop. It's got a lot of interesting like samples and beats and stuff like that. It's a really cool album that way, but just listening to him rap is fantastic.
Awesome. Well, definitely check it out. I'm a huge Danny Brown fan. I think he's like one of the most original dudes making music. Mm-hmm. Nobody will ever sound like Danny Brown. Like that's a sound that nobody will ever mimic. Awesome. Well, Law, thank you so much for joining us. First of many appearances you will have on this show. We really appreciate you coming on. And yeah, man, I'm going to give you the floor here. I'm going to let you plug away. But, you know, if you've got an article you want to plug, where can people follow you on social media, all that stuff. Take it away, man. The spotlight's on you.
Yeah. Well, I'm at The Athletic. So I appreciate both Ryan, Joseph. Thank you. Clip set all day. And, I'm at Law Murray the New. All socials, all socials apply, even the ones that I'm not on, because you know, make sure that y'all let me know if anyone's trying to burn me. Appreciate that. And yeah, follow The Athletic. You know, I know y'all got to pay for media, but I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate having a job, and I appreciate getting the opportunity to do this. So, I'm going to be consistent this month. Last month, I wrote quite a bit. So I feel like all those are worth it on some level. And we'll see what we get the rest of this month of April.
For sure. Well, thank you. Everybody go read Law on The Athletic. You've done an amazing job of stepping in for Jovan there. So, you know, definitely check out Law's work.
Were the shoes really that big? I mean, Jovan, you know.
Hey, yo, like I'm looking forward to, hopefully I'll see my guy tomorrow. Jovan, like I said, we go back almost a decade now. And I got like that's my bro. So really appreciate Jovan for more than just the partnership at The Athletic. Like he's one of my better friends in this industry.
When you took, I'm just curious, when you took over for him, did they already clear out all the hair products from his former desk to make room for you, or was that still there?
I mean, we in a pandemic. I'll get back to you on that. We used to, we used to share a desk area at ESPN, and okay. I've never seen any of Jovan's hair products. So I'm a kill that part of it for y'all. Sorry, not sorry, but yeah, it's like me and Jovan, we've been in close quarters. Like I said, that's my guy. So look, hopefully I'll get to see him soon. This pandemic has been so weird. When you don't see people you work with, it's just the weirdest thing. So that's my guy, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, but I'm sure what you'll find in that desk is just little notebooks of how to crush Clippers chemistry, just scribbled in like little notes and little bullet points as to how he's going to do it systematically.
All right, I'm putting a cork on this conversation. I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. Law, as you said earlier, you got to pay for media. If you feel like helping support us, completely independent show, keep the advertisers out of here, go to patreon.com/clipsetpod and you can become a paid patron to help support us, help keep us completely listener supported and run, because as always, we are for Clipper Nation by Clipper Nation. So we appreciate anything that you can throw our way. And if you don't have the means to do that, all good. Totally understand. The show is always going to be free on all platforms, no matter what. Wherever you're listening to us, just hit subscribe so you stay up to date with all the freshest episodes. And if there's an option to rate and review, do that too. That would help us out a lot. We appreciate all the support. We will catch you all next week. As always, remember to wash, rinse, sanitize, repeat.
And if you don't, Donald Sterling wins.
And that's a fact. Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
Wow.
Who is that?
What?
You thought you could get rid of me, but I'm back.
Wow. Wait. The Clippers. Wait. Wait.
Is that fucking Jovan?
Jovan, is that you?
What's up, guys? Are you ready for this to be the last podcast episode?
Yeah, we're really ready for that.
We're tanking our Patreon right now.
I'm pretty sure you guys are getting canceled right now.
Well, we're super excited to have you on, regardless of the circumstances.
Thank you for having me.
We wanted to bring you on because obviously the Lakers play the Clippers tomorrow. It's not going to be as star-studded, I think, as we want.
Yeah.
But we wanted to preview that a little bit and then kind of take the temperature of where the two LA teams are right now. So, Jovan, how you feeling about your new beat?
It's been super weird to transition during the pandemic, right? Because normally, as traveling beat person, you'd be on the road and you'd be able to meet people and make connections. And it's definitely been difficult to do that in Zoom world. But it's been nice. Like it feels weird on this podcast talking about it, because it's almost like your like ex is interviewing you, right? Like it's I've enjoyed it, right? Like I think for like covering the defending champs is its own challenge, and there are the pros and the cons of covering the Lakers and the good and the bad that comes with that. And I obviously don't need to tell you guys about the bad,
right?
Because they're the Darth Vader of the NBA world. But it's been nice. Like I've enjoyed the challenge and trying. You know, I think there's been a lot of interest with some of the new pieces, and of course Trez and kind of how he's fit in, and but also now this Marc Gasol storyline, which I think has been really interesting. And to me has kind of been there's been like some Zubats Gasol parallels, where like, no, you know, all the data supports Mark playing, and he can't play like too big of a role, but, I think he should clearly be in the rotation, but this whole Andre Drummond situation has changed that. And then you got Dennis Schroeder with his contract situation, and it's just been some drama with the Lakers. So that's kind of kept me busy these last few weeks.
So what you're saying is you were the curse all along.
Yeah. In a roundabout way. Yeah. It's just wherever I go, wherever I go, there's chemistry issues and locker room drama and
an injury. Yeah. An injury too.
I got to say, it's funny that you said that this is kind of like your ex is like interviewing you, which is funny because like usually like, you know, in a breakup, you look at your ex and you're like, oh, they're doing so well over there. Look at that new guy that they're with or whatever it is. Not the case here, Jovan. I got to be honest.
I mean, the Clippers are ahead in the standings.
It's true. It's very true. Oh, man. What a hellscape of a year. So we wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about the Battle of LA. I mean, it's happening tomorrow, but more about it in terms of the future. Do you think that we're going to get that playoff series this year?
Yeah, I do. I also think we might get it a little bit earlier than we expected. we might get it in the first round. It really, to me, is looking like it's probably going to be one of the first two rounds. I do think that the LeBron and AD injuries are probably going to keep those guys out through mid-April at the earliest, but it might even be deeper into late April. And I don't know how much Lakers basketball you guys have watched. during this LeBron and AD-less stretch, but they're like a bottom five, like lottery team without those two. And, right. You know, I think, so they got this brutal 7-game road trip. You know, technically the Clippers game is a road game. And, right. you know, aside from that game, Miami, Brooklyn, Toronto, even New York and Charlotte, who in most years we'd look at as like easy wins on like an East Coast swing. Those two teams are, you know, feisty Eastern Conference playoff teams. So, I mean, there's a real chance the Lakers go like 1-6 or 2-5 over their next, you know, 6-7 games. And so I think there's a good chance that they could be in the 6 or 7 spot. And, you know, we'll kind of see what happens with the Clippers. And I know they've had their own health issues this season, and Paul George is dealing with some stuff, but you know, there's a good chance that they're, you know, these two teams are in that 2-7, 3-6 bracket and end up playing in either the first round or the second round.
And that kind of feels like a dud, right? Like we've all been waiting since last year to have this like epic battle of LA with presumably the two best teams in the West. And if we get that as a first round series with like both teams, their stars are kind of like, I don't know if they're healthy or like, you know, all that other shit. Like it really feels like we're being robbed of what was basically marketed as the marquee matchup in the NBA last year.
Oh, ESPN will implode if that happens, especially if there's like one or two stars injured. ESPN will fucking implode.
I wonder if it's going to end up being like the kind of Kobe LeBron situation where like in from like 08 to 2011, it was like those they're on each other's corners. Right. And it was they had the Nike commercials and they traded off some MVPs and everyone was kind of waiting for the LA Cleveland or the LA Miami finals that we just never got. And if this doesn't happen this year, you know, I don't know, maybe it happens next year, maybe there's a year after that, but like it feels like we have a like 2 to 4 year window of this battle LA really being relevant with, you know, both teams having their stars and their relative primes, depending on how you look at it. But I mean, to me, the West still runs through LA, right? Like you know, because that's a question I always get anytime I do radio or podcast. It's who's the biggest threat to the Lakers? And you know, to me, I continue to say it's the Clippers. Like, you know, I think what Utah is doing is really impressive. What Phoenix is doing is impressive. You know, Denver, I think got better with the Aaron Gordon trade, but it's still the Clippers. Like, I think, you know, and obviously the Clippers have had their own issues where they sometimes get in their own way. But I think, you know, barring that happening again in this postseason, like I do think the Clippers are probably going to beat every non-Lakers opponent in their way, and the Lakers are going to beat every non-Clippers opponent, and it's going to just end up being those two match up in you know, again, first round, second round conference finals. But I do think those are the two best teams, you know, not only in the West, but probably two of the best three in the league, including Brooklyn. And, you know, I really think those are my three, you know, I'd pick one of those three to win the championship, which isn't crazy to say, but you know, there's been a lot of Milwaukee talk, Philly talk, Utah. Like I still think it's the two LA teams or Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm with you on that one. Brooklyn is just terrifying to me. Brooklyn is truly terrifying with their seven-headed monster or whatever they have there.
It's crazy. So sometimes I think we overthink it, and you know, because we have seen, I mean, going back to even Brooklyn, right, where they had Pierce and KG and Darren Williams and Brooke Lopez and Joe Johnson, and we've seen like variations of super teams like not work. But I think this is more along the lines of like the Warriors with KD and Steph, or the Heat with LeBron and Wade. Like this is, it's just like they might have too much talent where it doesn't matter which LA team comes out of the West. Like that team is just that good.
The only thing about the Nets that I think about is the prevailing thing about the defense. But you know, that first year Warriors team, yeah, they had like the core four, right, that were all people who could pick you apart in their own way. But then, you know, 4 through 8, 4 through 9 was also still a really, you know, strong squad. So when you look at it, it's like Brooklyn, you look at that fucking three-headed monster, and then you kind of go down the line and you're like, okay, maybe that's where the series shifts. If like maybe two of them don't have a good game, you can steal a couple games and then get it tight. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm all in on like the Brooklyn Nets are going to waltz through everything, but they're definitely, I think, the favorites in the East. So
yeah,
we're thinking Battle of LA happens. Battle of LA maybe happens in the first round. Do you have a way to call it? Do you think, you know, one way or the other?
I mean, it's tough because I just don't know what, like to me, I think the biggest wild card in the NBA right now, and again, I'm not like breaking any news here. Like, I think it just is the status of LeBron and AD, because we really don't know. And with AD, he has Achilles tendinosis, and that's the same injury that Kawhi has been dealing with, you know, the quad tendinosis that caused him to load manage for 2 years. So like, this isn't something that, you know, this is something that's probably going to affect him beyond this year. And right. I think clearly the Lakers, with the way they've handled his timetable and just the sort of vagueness with it, you know, they're not just going to be extra cautious with him. And it really is about, you know, even if he misses the next 4 weeks or whatever, like we have to make sure that this isn't like, we're not even just thinking about this season. It's about, this is our franchise guy for like the next half decade plus. And right. we got to make sure this isn't a blown Achilles like Kevin Durant with the Warriors. So I think that, you know, just lack of clarity with the health of their stars, you know, would definitely give me more confidence in the Clippers in that matchup at this point. But it's just, it's hard to, because I do think that, you know, I saw it last year, like, you know, it was a 2-2 season series, but I felt the Clippers were the, had some matchup advantages in that series. And, you know, I think before the Denver series, I was leaning Clippers over Clippers in a Clippers Lakers. Once I saw the Lakers beat the Rockets, and you know, I think around like game four, game five of the Denver series, I was like, I'm about to be really unpopular, but I'm probably going to pick the Lakers in six. If the Clippers advance, win game six or seven, I'm probably gonna have to pick the Lakers in six. I just think they're playing better right now. And mm-hmm. obviously that didn't end up happening, and I didn't have to make that call, but that was the way I was leaning then. But after seeing opening night, you know, and just seeing like some of the Clippers' advantages in that matchup, like the 3-point shooting to me is a huge thing, because the Lakers are, it's such a weakness for them. And obviously the Clippers mm-hmm. are having one of the best 3-point shooting seasons of all time. So, you know, that is a decisive advantage for them. I think the Kawhi PG matchups have been tough for the Lakers to match up with. At the same time, you know, LeBron is LeBron. And I think mm-hmm. What I noticed in the season series last year was I felt like LeBron got progressively more comfortable. And if you look at the last two games that the Lakers won, LeBron played at a much different level than he did in the first two matchups.
Right.
And that's kind of how LeBron works, obviously, where he's kind of reading the situation and learning. And then AD is kind of the X factor, where I do think he's just a matchup problem for everybody. Right. So not just the Clippers, yeah. but
you know, almost
looking at
even, almost you know, everybody, almost everybody. Patrick Patterson is the secret weapon there.
Yeah. Or maybe Boogie Cousins now. I don't know. But I mean, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, Pat's probably done the best event of any club. I mean, I thought Zoo did fairly well in opening night against AD in his minutes. But I mean, yeah, like AD is the one guy where I think it really comes down to, I guess, in a long winded way of saying this, like, I think it comes down to what version of AD you get, because the AD that we saw in the 2020 postseason was a beast. Right. Like I thought yeah. there were stretches in that postseason that he was better than LeBron. Like I think LeBron deserved finals MVP, but if you're looking at the totality of the Lakers playoff run, I thought AD was right below him, if not, you know, at his level. And if you're getting that version of AD, I think the Lakers win the series. If you're not, I you know, you might have to favor the Clippers, and they're going to have home court, which I think is going to start to matter more now with fans in the stands. And so I don't know. I'm really torn. Like it's tough. I think it's probably a 7-game series. And then to me, it just comes down to the health. And, you know, the health could also go the opposite way, right? Where is right. Patrick Beverley healthy? Is Paul right. George healthy? Like, you know, so it's tough to say because there's so many variables in the air. I mean, I don't know if I'm being a homer, like maybe I'd go Lakers in 7, but I don't feel great about that either way.
How weird did that feel, saying Lakers homer?
Yeah. It's been weird. I'm not going to lie. Like it's been, there was like the first like week, it was like I kept writing Clippers on everything, and then I had to like go back and delete it and write Lakers. Like it was super weird.
Well, we miss you, Jovan. We miss you. I don't know if Clipper Nation misses you, but we definitely miss you. If we do get the Battle of LA, Clipset fans, we are having Jovan back on. I don't care if you complain. Jovan, we really love talking to you. Thank you so much for entertaining us on this little bit that we decided to do today. We really appreciate it. I'm sure they know where to find you because they've been sending you hate mail for the last 6 weeks. But
yeah. If that's you want longer just, than that.
Yeah, I know, a little plug. Where can they find you? Where can they read you?
Yeah, if you want to troll me, I am at Jovan Buha, JOVANBUHA on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I made a TikTok now where I've been doing some NBA content. Not dancing. No dances yet. But maybe maybe if I get trolled hard enough, I might have to switch careers and become a TikTok dancer. But I want to say I'll use this platform to I want to clarify something. Because like
thank you everybody for joining us this week. Remember to like, subscribe.
No, I mean I just want to say like I think that there's been a lot of misperception on how the job works and how how reporting works. And I think without going too much into it, I just want to say that, I stand by everything I reported last year. I think that it bore out and it bore out in the bubble. It bore out in the playoffs. But, you know, for the most part, I think if you actually go back and read my Clippers coverage, it was positive for the most part. So I don't think that, I didn't have a vendetta against the team. I didn't have a vendetta against anybody in the locker room. Like, I've always viewed it as my job is to try to report as objectively as possible. And for all the people that have called me Jovanzel Buherl, I find it funny because I feel like I was the biggest Zoo supporter for 2 years. Like even going back to the first season, once they got Zoo, I was saying he wasn't playing enough. So if anything, I felt like I was the most critical of Montrezl Harrell before the Denver series, you know? So, I've just always tried to operate where like, I'm trying to be objective. I try to call it like I see it. And you know, that was a situation that, arose from talking to different people in that locker room and, not just on the player side, but on multiple side, multiple levels. And again, I think I mean, I stand by it. I think it again, kind of played out the way it played out. This season we'll see what happens. And, maybe some of the people that played a role in some of that are gone now, I guess myself included. I just want to say that I want to clarify that there was no hidden agenda. There was no secret MO. And I know in the grand scheme, it's a small percentage of Clipper fans saying some of that. I mean, I get if you just don't like me or you're mad, I switch sides like that. That's totally fine. But I just wanted to put it on wax, put it on record that that was not my intention at all. And again, I think if you look at a majority of my reporting and written pieces, they were fairly positive and even sometimes too much so, I would say. So I don't think that, I just wanted to clarify that.
So what you're saying is it was a mix fault. All right. So ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank Jovan Buha for being on the pod today. We really appreciate it, man. And we will get you on if the Battle of LA happens.